Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
How many of us find ourselves working from home right now? Because you're quarantined, because you're in lockdown for whatever reason, because of whatever's happening in our government or in your local area. But all of a sudden, you're like, I'm home and I got to keep working. Well, our first guest today, out of two guests that we're going to have, is Cynthia Spraggs. She is the CEO and founder of a company called Virtura, and they help people to learn how to work from home. And she is also the author of How to Work from Home and Actually Get Done, 50 Tips for Leaders and Professionals to Work Remotely and Outperform the Office. Here she is right now. Cynthia, thanks for joining us. And let me ask you this question. Are you working from home?
Alan, I am working from home. And I've actually been working from home since 1994. So I've been here for a while.
So let me ask you, this is something, you know, it's, and I'm the same kind of way. I actually have an office, but I don't have to be here. I have other employees and stuff. So some days I don't come in because my job allows me, as being a radio guy, to be able to make an appointment with my studio, show up, do the interview like I'm doing right now, and then skedaddle and get back to my life. But my business keeps going because I have a good cell phone, I have a laptop, and I can work wherever I am. So, you know, I have a one-hour radio show for Entrepreneur Magazine. The rest of the time, I am an entrepreneur. I'm out buying and selling and doing things. I love being able to work, you know, air quotes, work from home or work from wherever I am. But how did it start for you?
Well, it really started, I think, when I had my very, very first job in the early 80s. And I came into this huge room with fluorescent lights blaring down and all these cubicles and about 1,000 people. And I thought to myself, you know what? I don't think I really want to live my life this way. This doesn't look like a really efficient, very healthy, productive environment. So I, you know, obviously newly into the corporate game, I decided at that point I was going to find any job I could that would take me out of the office as much as I could. And as it turned out, IT sales or selling PCs in the early 80s was the way that I did that.
Wow.
And after that, I just orchestrated any job I had, or I looked for jobs where I could have that flexibility of not having to be what I thought was not a particularly productive environment.
Okay, so tell us about Virtura, this company, Virtura.com, V-I-R-T-I-R-A.com. How do you help people work from home? And I know you have 50 tips in the book, but give us kind of a bird's eye view of what you guys do with your website and how you help corporate folks.
Sure. So most of our clients are big tech companies out of Silicon Valley. So clients like Cisco and Dell, you know, some other large ones like that. And what we found years ago is that traditional management methods, traditional ways of managing projects just don't work virtually. You do not have the ability to step into somebody's office and check up how they're doing. So we had to early on had to adapt methods to work for people really spread either office to office globally or office to home or, you know, wherever they happen to be dialing in from. So the one thing we did find is that in order to be effective virtually, you really do have to learn how to communicate well. And that is either your words have to be more succinct, if you can use a graphic to describe an idea, you should be doing that. So it's a lot about you don't have the interpersonal connections with who you're talking to make a point. You've got to make that point very effectively. And all of our new hires, we actually give them a book called The Elements of Style, which was probably it's a very short guide on how to be succinct and how to communicate succinctly. Mm. And we give them tests and we tell them, you know, cut your text and cut your cut what you're doing down as much as possible.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like just the facts, ma'am. That's what
right.
we want.
Right. All right. When we come back, I want to talk about how surveys show that more than 40% of respondents plan to move more than 4 hours away from their current home. A lot of people are deciding, you know, I don't like the policies of this state. Maybe I'll move to the next one over, or where my job is, or whatever it might be. But housing costs are another thing to consider. So there's a lot of things to consider when you think about working from home. There are a lot of benefits. We're talking to Cynthia Spraggs, VIRTIRA, Virtura.com. We'll talk about her book more, too, and a lot of tips about working from home. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. Be right back. Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm Alan Taylor. And if you've been thinking about working from home, or you already are, and you need to be able to do it more efficiently and actually get shiznit done, as Cynthia Spraggs says. Of course, that's my made-up word. She's got some advice for you. Her book, she's the author of the book, How to Work from Home and Actually Get That Stuff Done. Shiznit. I can't say the actual word she wrote. 50 tips for leaders and professionals to work remotely and outperform the office. Let's talk about how housing costs play a key role in this migration to work from home. Maybe just shine a light on that for a minute.
Sure. So, I mean, I think you've seen the statistics that they estimate around 6 to 11% of the working population is planning on migrating. I mean, think about those numbers. That's somewhere between, conservatively, let's say 10 million people
right.
in order to take advantage of remote work. So, you know, you think about the average housing cost in San Francisco, which is just under $1,000 a square foot, versus the average cost of a square foot in Nashville, which is about $199 a square foot.
Right.
So we're seeing a big influx of people looking at these markets and thinking, hey, you know, I can get rid of my mortgage. I can afford better schools and better, I can afford a nicer way to live. So we are seeing, and not only employees are looking at this, we're seeing big companies like Hewlett Packard a year ago just announced they were opening a new office in San Jose. And now they're announcing another new office in Houston. Yeah. They're changing their headquarters to Houston because everybody is realizing that you now have options on where you need to locate.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens in the next couple of years with migration and real estate.
You know, it's funny. My brother-in-law last night, he says here, let's just see. He says something about moving to Texas. He says, and then, of course, you have, you know, certain blue states doing certain things and state property will plummet in the blue states and the red states will see that skyrocket. And he's talking about, he says, I'm thinking about moving to Texas. And you could buy a house in some parts of Texas for, you know, a whole house and land and the whole nine yards for under $100,000. My sister recently moved there about 3 years ago. She's been buying houses because she sold one for $500,000 and bought five. And now she has rentals near a college. It's like, yeah, you literally have a lot of incentive to think about doing what we're talking about here. Okay, economic benefits to live in a rural area. But what about, you know, the moving costs and all that? Can you ask your company that you work for to help you with that? I'm just curious.
Well, I think it really depends where your company is going. I think companies are making some pretty strong statements right now of whether they're going to bring people back to the office after this situation, this pandemic we're in is over,
right.
or whether they are going to allow some kind of a hybrid work environment or a completely remote work environment. So if it's hybrid, they're probably still going to be expecting you to do some kind of a commute, couple, 2 to 3 days a week. So moving more than 4 hours away probably isn't going to be an option. So I think if I was working for one of the, you know, for any kind of an employer, I would be seeing what they are talking about future-wise. Are they investing in more real estate? Are they divesting real estate? What kind of moves are they making? Because we probably have about 9 months, say at least 9 months to a year to plan, employees and employers. So I personally think that the, you know, if I was going to choose the town to work in, I would be, and depending on the employer, I'd probably want to be within about an hour of an airport. Mm-hmm. And I think of all the ancillary services and see, are those services there that I need in order to locate myself and my family?
Right. I have a friend who just moved. He, you know, a lot of people are like, I got to get out of the city. The city's going crazy. So he bought a place literally 4 hours from where he lives right now. Four hours is, you know, out in the middle of, if you just said, I'm going to drive out to the middle of nowhere, that's where he went. And he says, I love it. The problem is he's 3 hours from any airport. And so to your point, that makes a big difference. All right, when we come back, we're going to do one more segment with you. Maybe you can talk about maybe the three or four of the most important things to consider if you're talking about working from home. A lot of us are being forced to right now with this quarantine and lockdown and all the stuff that's going on. We're talking to Cynthia Spraggs, VIRTIRA.com, Virtira. We'll be right back. Life is brilliant.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So our topic right now is, well, it's a book entitled How to Work from Home and Actually Get Done. I know, my guy has to keep beeping that, but that's the name of the book. Subtitle, 50 Tips for Leaders and Professionals to Work Remotely and Outperform the Office. CEO of Virtira is Cynthia Spraggs. And Cynthia, maybe you could skip a stone through some of these 50 tips for us, because I think a lot of people are really, really thinking about this hard right now.
Well, of course they're thinking about it hard, because most of them are probably in the middle of it. A lot of them are probably there that maybe didn't really plan on working from home, and neither did their employers.
Right.
You know, I started to write the book in April because I could see the pandemic had really turned everything upside down, and I just saw an opportunity to share some best practices for working remotely that really have become second nature to everybody in our company and our clients. So, and there's so many tips shared online. I'll just go through a couple of things that I think would be most effective.
Yes.
Number one is you really, really need to understand how to limit your bandwidth. In other words, if you've got, let's say we're going into a third wave, everybody's back at home, you know, the kids are on streaming games and everything. If you're on a video call or you're on some kind of a business conference, you're going to really have a problem. Your bandwidth can crash. So number one, learn how to get into your router and set it so that it gives you a dedicated channel and you can limit other people.
Wow. Now, hold on.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you first said to limit your bandwidth, I've said a lot, you know, this, you know, I just don't have enough bandwidth for this. And I'm talking about my own self. And I think that whole statement you just made works both ways, because if you pile on too much onto yourself, you know, on your own workload, you'll also crash. But I love the fact that I misunderstood, but it works both ways. So that's a great tip, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It's amazing how many people don't realize you can set up separate channels. So that was a really interesting one. And if I wanted to work at home and I was, you know, if I'm thinking of maybe leaving the corporate world, like your guests that you're going to be coming on today, I think be thinking of all those people that are now moving. And, you know, let's think about it. What the explosion of dog, anything to do with dogs and pets is going to skyrocket. Dog walking, dog sitting, ergonomic specialists. Those are probably also going to be in terms of new home office setups. Smart home consultants. There's going to be there's going to be an explosion and opportunity for people to service all these at-home workers.
Right.
And so I think it's really an exciting time for people that wanting to get into their own businesses.
You know, it's funny. I have a friend who he wanted so bad to set up his own business in a mall. And that's all he wanted to do was get the money. And it was expensive when you go to a mall. But see, this was 2 or 3 years ago. And because he was never able to raise the money to do it until, oddly enough, about March of 2020, which was what bad timing, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he sets up this business. He finally saves the money. And then all of a sudden, the malls get shut down. And, you know, I told him, I said, that was a stroke of luck from God for you. I said, you have now learned that your gold mine was the fact that you went to people's homes and helped them with their computers. He's an Apple computer specialist. And so he was able to shut down that big expensive store and kind of recreate his business. And what you're talking about servicing people that work from home, is a brilliant entrepreneur opportunity. Fantastic. So good.
Absolutely.
Good for you.
If I was going to start a business right now, that's where I'd be looking. I think it's, and especially in the second tier parts of the country, it's going to be incredible. What services are going to need?
Well, you may have just, by the way, you may have just helped a lot of people figure out what they need to do next. All right, give me one more before we go.
You know, I've got to say, if you're struggling with working from home and you're really miserable, consider the fact that you may not be suited to home work. Everybody has been forced to move from home, and there's been lots of studies like the Dingell and Neiman study of the University of Chicago has really shown what 37% of U.S. jobs could be done at home. Well, that's great, but you know, there's also individuals that really are not suited to working from home. So you should be also looking at employers who are going to be clawing people back to the office. Because if your employer is going all virtual and you're miserable, it's probably not going to be a good match. I think it's reality, right?
Yeah, some
people do well at the office.
Yeah.
Some people do well at home.
There you
and
go.
You're either on one side or the other.
No, you're 100% right. You have to be honest with yourself at some point. All right. So the website is virtira.com, V-I-R-T-I-R-A.com. The book, once again, author Cynthia Spraggs, is How to Work from Home and Actually Get Bleep Done, 50 Tips for Leaders and Professionals to Work Remotely and Outperform the Office. Cynthia, thank you so much. You did a great job here today. I think a lot of people will learn a lot from you and your book. So I hope that they'll buy your book and visit your website. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan. Really appreciated it. Have a great day.
You too. And also, you know, we're talking about this. Our next guest, Shelley Brander, she was a brander. She was a big branding agent. And she decided, you know, when she had kids, she needed to do what she really wanted to do, which was open a yarn store. And now she's doing 8 figures, a worldwide company. Just shows you can do what you love to do. If you do what you love to do, you never work a day in your life. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
What are the possibilities of a woman who is a professional branding person to have the last name Brander? Yeah, she's a Brander, and that's also her last name, Shelley Brander. She's also founder and CEO of Loops Productions, and I think this story is fun. I told Shelley that I get probably 1,000 pitches a month, and every now and then one just calls out to me, and Shelley, yours did. So let me just set this up for the both of us. You have a new book coming out or that is already out or about to be out called Move the Needle, Yarns from an Unlikely Entrepreneur. You said something to me in the just the moments we talked before the show here, make your hobby your jobby. And I was like, I like her. She's got good energy. But, you know, this who would have thought that you would have gone from a branding agency, you brander you, to a worldwide movement in the world of knitting. Yes, I mean, knitting. It's like everybody would go, knitting? Yeah, yep, knitting. And she's talking about, you know, some big numbers. travels the world doing this. Can you give us, you know, kind of the 30-second elevator pitch on Shelley Brander? Where did this woman come from?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it is a crazy story. I was in the branding world. I started out as a copywriter, loved writing, loved telling stories, loved connecting and helping build brands for my clients. But when I had kids, I started to wonder if this is what I wanted to do the rest of my life. Did I want to always, you know, sell pizza and cable? And for some reason, it just kept calling to me that I wanted to open a local yarn store. I had learned in it when I was 16 years old, and I could never find a cool yarn store. Imagine that. Couldn't find a modern knitting store. Right. It was all very old-fashioned, scratchy, itchy yarn. And it was just a burning desire that just wouldn't go away. And yeah, so I went ahead and opened a local store. It took a lot of doing to get that done. I struggled along for about 7 years before I took my first dollar from that. Eventually figured out how to make it work. Really, online was the key for me. And then it's since grown into first into an e-commerce business, then into a subscription business. And now we fly around the world making productions about yarn and knitting and inspiring knitters and crocheters around the world. So it's turned into a whole movement. And I really do believe, you know, creativity and specifically craft can connect people in a way not like anything else. And that's what I do every day, and I love it. So,
well, you made your
whole new world.
You made your hobby your jobby. And I know that in your book, you talk about creative as a new currency. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I absolutely believe that 100%. Because that mm-hmm. is the differentiator between you as an individual and just another, you know, worker. Because there's a lot of workers out there, especially in today's world. Anybody, they're all willing to work. But a creative worker, a person that has leader qualities and creativity, and one that says she's on a mission to knit the world together and encourage creatives to put their passion first. Now, there is a differentiator. And I love and respect that. But a yarn store? I'm just wondering what your friend said when you said to them, all right, I've got a couple kids now. I'm going to give up this kind of corporate life, and I'm going to open a yarn store because I love to knit. They probably went, no, Shelley, no, don't take the car. You'll kill yourself. You know, it's like a yarn store?
That's exactly what happened. In fact, at the time, I worked with my husband. I married the guy with the right last name, like you said, right? Brander. That worked out for me.
Yeah.
And we were like, it's either advertising or ranching, right?
Right.
So it was branding. But my sister at the time worked for us. We always had a really small staff because we always wanted to work, you know, like we like to do the whole process of the branding. We had both worked at big agencies and we always wanted to have that direct contact with the client. My sister at the time that I decided to do this was our only employee. We called her the office manager because she was the nanny for the kids, and then she helped with bookkeeping and stuff. And she literally quit on the spot. When I said I was going to open a yarn store, she quit. She said, you're throwing your whole life away. You're throwing my life away. You're throwing your family's life away. I mean, every single person I told this idea to said I was completely insane. Because we had really big clients. We had Hard Rock and AT&T and Cox Communications. You know, we had built a pretty cool sounding life,
right.
You know, on the surface. But I was like, there's a zillion branding people out in the world, but how many people have built a yarn empire, you know?
Right.
I was so drawn to that until recently. I hadn't heard of the blue water principle. I'm sure you probably have, you know, the idea of when all the sharks are in the water turning it red, you swim for the blue ocean, right?
Right.
And I think that's what it was. It was just super interesting to me to zig when everyone else was zagging.
Right.
And it just drew me in. So,
I love it. Can I ask, does your sister work for you anymore?
She does not work for me anymore. She went on to work for other ad agencies, and we're very close now.
Yeah.
But that was a rough moment. That was, and it's in the book.
Oh.
I'm super transparent in the book. I'm probably more transparent than most people think I should have been in the book. But I think I needed to really share the really raw elements of everything for people to understand, because there's going to be obstacles. Every entrepreneur knows that there's going to be obstacles that you know about and that you don't see coming.
You know,
and so I just decided to be very open about it.
I think that is precious. And I don't mean like, oh, precious. I mean like it's a precious commodity to for you to be authentic, transparent, honest. Because when people read your book, Move the Needle, they're going to be able to tell whether this is a polished piece or whether it's an honest piece, and they're going to be able to see your heart. And if they can't see that, then, you know, will they even finish the book? But if they see that, they'll be eager to turn the pages to see what this Shelley Brander has done next and how she did it and how she overcame some of the things in life and in business. Like I see here in the third section of your book, When Things Unravel. You want to talk about that for a moment?
And that is the thing. I wanted to write a book that people, I mean, I know how busy everybody is. And so I'm like, I want to write the kind of book that I would want to read, which is in story form. You know, it really is like a combination of a memoir slash business slash inspirational book. So I did tell a lot of stories of when things went wrong, and it gets really personal. And one of those stories is I have a son who's on the spectrum when he was born. And I talk very intimately about when he was diagnosed, and any parent of a kiddo with learning differences knows what that moment is like. And at the time, I felt like my entire world was falling apart, that I would have to stop any business endeavors that I had or anything that had anything to do with me and focus entirely on him. And looking back now, I realized that that moment when he was diagnosed, actually, and I turned into a mama bear and dug in and found every, you know, researched every possible way to help Sam, that actually opened up a well of energy in me that I didn't know existed until that moment. Now looking back, I could see that energy, if I hadn't gone through that, it wouldn't have given me the resilience to get through, you know, opening a local yarn store without having a clue what I was doing and growing into what I did. And so I think that's especially important for women and moms who think, well, once I have kids, you know, it just seems insurmountable.
Right.
Even if your kids don't have special needs.
All right, hold tight, because I got to take a break, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, I want to say that wellspring that you tapped into was kind of like the supernatural, because you were selfless. You didn't do it for you did it because it was a supernatural thing. So we'll take a little break. I don't want to get too deep into that, but you know what I'm talking about, lady.
I do. I know exactly what you mean.
Shelley Brander, you can find her at loopslove.com. She also has loopsclub.com and knitstars.com. I'm Alan Taylor. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. Be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Well, this is Entrepreneur Weekly, Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere. Don't forget, check our website, entrepreneur.com. And we're talking to Shelley Brander, founder and CEO of Loops Productions. She has a book, Move the Needle, Yarns from an Unlikely Entrepreneur. And you guys can find that if you want at her website for the book. It's called theneedlebook.com. Needle, you know, like knitting. Theneedlebook.com. So, Shelley, again, thanks for joining us. Let's talk about one of the things you talk about in your book, this creative as a new currency. Because I strongly believe that. So I'm just curious, you know, your take on creative as a currency.
So if you think about it, with the proliferation of AI, right, which is amazing. I mean, there's so many things the bots are able to do. But the smarter AI gets, the more precious creative gets, because that's the one thing that they can't do.
Right.
So, you know, and I think creatives on the whole tend to really undervalue what they do. You know, my husband is a painter now, and he has the hardest time putting a price on his paintings. And just across the board, for some reason, creatives just hold back and always can undervalue.
Right.
And so it's a big part of my message for them to realize how important it is, how precious it is, their creativity. And it's okay to monetize it. It doesn't ruin it for you. You know, it empowers you. It takes away the scarcity mindset and empowers you to create more and create better. So it just sort of builds on itself once you push past that initial fear of monetizing the thing you love to do.
You know what? Doubt creeps in and tells you you're not worth anything. This is kind of human nature. Don't ask me why it happens, but it happens. Or the other side of spectrum is that you're, you know, an arrogant pig and you overprice everything and, you know, you have that problem. So it's just good to be well balanced, you know. But I think you're right. Yeah. It's hard because I'm an artist and I've been an artist my whole life and I always been very artistic. So I kind of, you know, it resonates with me what you said about your husband, because I was many years ago, I used to do airbrush art. And the one thing about airbrush artists is that, you know, they're good at certain things. They do cars and they do murals on, you know, on walls and things. And I was one of those guys, but I just felt like I'm just a sign painter, you know. It's just, you know, my talent, my God-given talent to do freehand artwork with an airbrush. I'm just a good sign painter is kind of how I felt about myself because, you know, I just had that inferiority complex, you might say. But as I look back at my young life, I just didn't have anybody ever say what we're talking about right now, which is to value yourself and what you do and your creativity. And it is a currency, everybody. It really, really is. And just to hear these words for people probably opens up their minds. I'll give you an example. My daughter-in-law, she's an incredible artist. And she has a 1.5-year-old, my grandson, and she lets him do all this finger painting. And then it's just a big old mess on a piece of paper. And then so she posted last night this picture that she says, so I let him start the painting and he does all this, you know, finger painting and all this. And it was a bunch of blue and green and blue and green and blue. And then he put a big plop of orange right in the middle of it. And she looked at it and what she saw was a koi fish, you know, those big old koi fish, right?
Yeah.
So she decided, yeah, I'm just going to give a little bit of shape to this little koi fish. And I'm telling you what, if you hadn't heard that story, you would have said, wow, that's a beautiful painting of a koi fish, and had no idea that, you know, 50% of it was done by a 1.5-year-old just, you know, making finger painting on a painting. And I loved it because it was her creativity that turned just a mess into a piece of art. So that's what we're talking about. The fact that we have these amazing talents, that creativity is a new currency. You can read about this in the book Move the Needle, Yarns from an Unlikely Entrepreneur. Her name is Shelley Brander. Again, you can find the book at theneedlebook.com or loopslove.com, her website. We're going to have one more segment with you. Do not go anywhere. I love this kind of creative talk. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
It comes right from the heart. Don't go anywhere. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
We're talking to Shelley Brander, founder and CEO of Loops Productions. And, you know, she had the big corporate life flying high at 30,000 feet. And one day, had a couple of kids and kind of said, you know what, I got to pull the ripcord. I'm out of here. And she pulls the ripcord and she's flying through the air. And all of a sudden, she lands in the land of Entrepreneur. And everybody's speaking a different language. And everything she's learned is now like a whole other language because you're an entrepreneur now. So I love that, by the way, because you had to do things that, you know, you could just clock out at 5 o'clock before. And now you just can't do that. So what I would love to know is, you know, just some of the lessons along the way that you can share with some of these beginning entrepreneurs, some of the folks that have been in it for a while and just keep scratching their scabby head going, why am I not, you know, whatever. So give us some lessons from the life of Shelley Brander.
Thanks. Okay. So for me, probably the number one thing, the biggest do differently when I look back through everything. Again, it took me 7 years after opening a yarn store to take my first dollar from it. It took me 13 years of having the business to pivot completely away from my previous career. And the secret was, and what would have made it happen so much faster, is if I had brought in other resources earlier. And by that, I mean mentors and team and cohorts like accountability partners. I think as entrepreneurs, we just tend to put the pedal to the metal, figure it out, work through the tech on our own, work through the, wear every single hat. And that's part of the fun. You're always going to wear a lot of hats. But I would have moved so much farther, so much faster if I had brought in people to do the things that I was not so great at or didn't or weren't really in my zone of genius, like bookkeeping and the tech stuff. And, you know, if I brought in more coaching early on. So I tell people now when I mentor them, the second you can bring on, you know, get help from a mentor, the second you can bring on help, whether it's ICs or whatever outside help, do it. Just where you can just barely afford it, do it, because you're, it's like gasoline on the fire. You're just going to go so much faster if you can bring in other help.
Yes, I think it's true. And I heard a little something in there that maybe it slipped by me. So you continued doing some of your branding work while you opened the store, and you slowly, you didn't just pull a ripcord and we're like, I'm done. You kind of slowly went from one life to the other.
It was a pretty big
ripcord. It was still a big ripcord?
Yeah. Yeah, it still was a pretty big ripcord because my branding business was with my husband, right? Uh-huh. So we were completely enmeshed, and I was kind of the rainmaker. I was the strategy person and the account person. So yeah, it was still a big conversation to have with my husband to say, hey, I'm going to move away from this business and open a yarn store, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So yeah, it was still a very difficult conversation. And yeah, it took 13 years. My plan was to be out of branding entirely after a year. And, you know, it just didn't make money as fast as I wanted it to, or because I had to figure so much stuff out for so long.
Right.
And I did have a mentor in the very beginning. The one mentor I had, I didn't even know how to write a business plan. I had no idea where to start. I'm like, hey, which one of my friends has an MBA? So I had a friend who, I figured out a friend that had an MBA and took him to sushi, and he agreed to help me write the business plan. So the sushi, for the price of a sushi meal.
Yeah, right. So now a worldwide movement. Give us 1 minute on Loops Yarn Store and what you do with all these things. Give me kind of where, bring us all the way fast forward to current.
Yeah. So we have our flagship yarn store, and we have an e-commerce site, loopslove.com. We have a membership, loopsclub.com, where we send luxury yarn kits all around the world 4 times a year.
Wow.
And then we have something called Knit Stars that's it's like Afterglass on steroids. Every year we produce a season of knitting courses and documentary videos with 10 knitting stars around the world. And I've been to, you name it, Norway, Peru, all over the place, filming with these famous knit stars, which is super cool because it brings together my broadcast background and the storytelling, sort of my secret sauce. And I get to combine that with this crazy love of knitting. So that's my biggest passion project, along with a book.
Well,
and we just wound up our 5th season, so we're heading into our 6th year of Knit Stars.
Just find that at knitstars.com. That's when I want to make sure I get that in there. And the book, Move the Needle, Yarns from an Unlikely Entrepreneur, you can find that at theneedlebook.com. Well, congratulations on all your success, and I'm also happy to hear about your son, Sam, that had his little issues early on. You said he's in college now, or... doing well, and that's awesome.
Yeah, he's recently graduated. He was in a fraternity. He's working full time, and he's a geospatial analyst.
That's awesome.
He analyzes room footage. So yeah, everything is going great, and just living the dream, yarny dream.
Shelley Brander, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast.
All right, that's it for me this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.